Hi, I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. If not, just, you know, put your hand up and I'll start yelling. My sobriety date is, I'm an alcoholic, if I didn't say that. My sobriety date is September 14th of 2004. The Midtown group of Washington, D.C. is my home group. It meets in Bethesda, Maryland on Sunday nights from 7:30 to 9. If you're in the area, I'd love for you to come by. It's a great meeting. I love it, and I hope you love your home group as much as I love my home group, and I think it's the best in the world. And I have a sponsor, and she also attends that home group, and she has more time than me, and she has been my guiding light through sobriety so far, and I'm grateful for everything that has happened, and I'm grateful that you've asked me to come up here and speak. And I will do my best to share my experience, strength, and hope with you all today and tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm a little nervous, a little shaky, but hopefully that will be better. You guys are all alcoholics here, so it's, you know, I'm in with my company, my people. But, you know, nothing from when I was growing up could make me an alcoholic. Nothing really bad happened to me, and but I can tell you, I know I felt very uncomfortable. I couldn't have told you that at the time, but I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to be around other people. I hear my grand sponsor talk about this, and she would be driving in cars, and there'd be other people, and like in the cars next to them, and want to be that person. And you don't know what's going on in their lives or anything. Just want to be somewhere out of what's in here, you know. And whenever I could, I would you know, skip out on any situation that I could. And you know, and I looking back, I can remember that. Like I said, I couldn't tell you that at the time. You know, and I grew up in a very loving household. My parents, all they've ever wanted to do was to see me happy, and they did whatever they could. And you know, I was very fortunate enough to get pretty much anything that I wanted. But it was never good enough. You know, anything I wanted something better. And if I didn't get it, I would, you know, like any child would throw just like, you know, hissy fit, you know. You know, things started to change, and I started remembering really feeling uncomfortable, really feeling out of place. It was like fifth grade, you know. The group of friends that I had, you know, even if they were like put at a different table during class, I would start crying, and I'd want to leave. Like, I couldn't, being around like other people, like I had my comfortable people, and that was about it, you know. And I'd pretend to run away when I was little just to get attention, and the furthest I would get would be like under a table, like next to couches in my parents' house, you know. And you know, I was terrified. It's like, I want you to look at me, I want you to pay attention to me, but God, get away, stop it, you know. It's just like, you know, just always a mess on the inside. And my first drink, my first drunk, they say, I'm sure my parents gave me alcohol at parties or whatever. I have an older brother, he's about a year and a half older than me, and I went to Ocean City, Maryland, and I went with this girl, and this I do remember clearly. We went to go drink on the beach, or we just went to find like people to hang out with. And to me, looking at her, she had everything that I wanted. She was pretty. All the guys kind of flocked to her, and I just didn't match up to her outsides. That's what I thought. And we got around all these guys and everything, and they were all drinking, and I hated it, and I felt so uncomfortable, and I didn't know who I could talk to or whatever. And immediately after I had that first beer, I was free, you know. And I remember that feeling, and I remember I could talk to people, and I loved it. And I smoked my first cigarette that night, and I didn't even know how to, and I was like coughing, and just, I didn't care, you know. I didn't care what people thought of me anymore, you know. And I felt like a part of, and you know. I was 15 or 14 at the time, and I didn't start drinking every day or be like, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. But I can tell you, any time my parents went out or let their liquor out, I was the first one there when they weren't looking. Pouring myself a glass of vodka, whatever they had out. I loved vodka. I just loved it. It was just like, it was light to me. You know, I remember when I went to my therapist and psychiatrist, they said that when I said the word vodka, my eyes like lit up like none other, you know. But anyway, so I started, you know, I was drinking their stuff, and I mean, to me, it made me feel good, you know. And I felt like, I just felt at ease. I felt like I could breathe. I always felt tensed up. You know, something was going on. When I was, you know, growing up, I had this, we all, kids always have a wild imagination, you know, but I was always terrified that something bad was going to happen to me. My parents could barely go out without getting a call from me. You know, my biggest one was there was a midget outside of my window on a ladder looking at me, you know, and that was just like, he was like there all the time. And to me, it was true, you know, and I was just terrified that something bad was going to happen to me, just so self-centered from the get-go, you know. And so, you know, this was, I'm starting to drink their vodka. They didn't really know. They would go out to parties, you know, or leave it out. They hadn't yet locked their liquor cabinet. But soon they did. And I would drink with my brother. He was a year and a half older than me. And, you know, we'd get drunk. He'd get me high. And, you know, and I was having fun, you know. You know, things started changing. The people I would hang out with, they didn't drink. You know, they wanted to watch movies. They wanted to braid your hair. They wanted to, you know, talk about boys. And that to me was boring. Yes, I would do it if I was drinking. You know, add that in. I'll do it. I'd do whatever, you know. But just, I didn't like going to watch movies at people's houses. It wasn't interesting to me. You know what I mean? And I remember the first time where I chose alcohol over something, or over these people, as they had a couple of girls over, and I said, I'm going to go get some vodka, and they're like, if you drink, we're leaving. And I was like, okay, and, you know, they left. And that was my first time I've noticed I made that choice, and which I thought was, you know, a choice, but really, it just did everything for me on the inside, and so, you know, and shortly after that, I met this guy. He was 21. He just got out of jail, and he was hanging around my high school, and I thought he was everything. You know, he was the best. He would pick me up from the middle of the day. We'd go get high. We'd go get drunk. You know, I didn't know this at the time, but he found out very shortly after he had a girlfriend at the school, and he was doing this with a girl at the class above me. So I found that out, and I don't know what a normal person would do, but my first reaction was like, this isn't right. He cannot be doing that with them. He needs to pay attention to me. So I started stalking him, and he didn't like that. You know, he just did not like that. And, you know, shortly after that, I remember just going downhill very quickly. I was cutting myself, and the best way I can describe that is I hated the way I felt, and I needed a distraction. And that was a physical distraction to my thinking and everything like that. So I was cutting myself, drinking my parents' vodka. It became more and more of a occurrence. You know, and I wanted to be a lifeguard, and so I thought I could fit in with the cool people in the summer, and I failed the CPR test, and I really thought my life was over. I cried for probably a week and a half, and I also told my parents that I wanted to die that night, and I said I just would rather be gone. And I was 15, and I don't know what that sounds like, because I'm not a mother today, I didn't care about anybody. You know, I cared about what was going on inside, and fix me, fix me, fix me, you know, and so things started happening from that. So I said I was 15. They started taking me to psychiatrist and therapist. And the medication hadn't started yet. But I was still, I don't remember if I disclosed to them that I was taking their vodka yet. I don't think I did because it hadn't been locked yet. Because I remember right before my 16th birthday, I'd come from school, and everyone, you know, we had exams or whatever, and I decided I was going to drink. And that was the first time I can remember, you know, in looking back, of course, the phenomenon of craving kicking in when it says in our book. I blacked out that day. I don't remember what happened. I do remember having that tall glass of vodka and being like, I need more, and running downstairs and getting more, and I just remember that feeling on the inside. And I left, my mom had come home that day, and apparently I had left the house, and I had been cutting myself, and I was a mess. And I went to this girl's house, and she had a little intervention on me, and she had you know, tried to take all the knives away from me, so I was pretty much just running around, you know, saying I was going to kill myself and all this. And so she had called some people over, and Instead, I found a bunch of markers and I started coloring myself in. And my parents had come over and they took me to the hospital, and that was my first trip to a hospital or institution. I went to a psych ward that night, and I woke up the next day and be like, what am I doing here? This is crazy, you know? My parents came in. I was there for a couple of days, and there was a lot of people older than me. I was 15, and there was one woman next to me who was a heroin addict, and I was like, what? I don't get it. You know, I just didn't know what I was doing there. Like, I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. And so my parents took me out, because, I mean, for a while, I could really say what I wanted to my parents to get them to pull me out of stuff. You know, for a while, they listened to my BS. All they wanted to do was they wanted to see me happy. They wanted to give me love, and that's all they wanted. And, you know, and I didn't know the full extent of terror and hell that I put their lives into until, you know, much later into sobriety. But, you know, so they took me out, and that's when I remember the medication started. You know, diagnosed with just a handful of stuff, like sleeping disorder, ADHD, anxiety disorder, there's probably a couple others, but they just started flowing in. And from that day, I started feeling a little bit better. I met people that started to drink like me. It's like I arrived almost. I was a junior in high school. I remember walking in that one day, and this girl was like, hey, do you want to get drunk? And I was like, oh my God, yes. You know, and that just kind of started in, you know, for, that whole maybe a year and a half left in high school, that's pretty much all I did. You know, I in the morning I'd go pick up this girl. We'd put anything up our nose that we could find. We would drink whatever 40 we had left over, any bottle, anything that we had. And we would do this, like, you know, throughout the day. You know, school was like, do we want to go, do we not want to go, you know. And I honestly, I don't know how I got by, you know. And I still, it's like leading a double life as well. You know, I had these friends, and then, you know, after school I'd go play, you know, on the field hockey team, or I'd go play softball. But that, you know, I got rid of one of them. You know, I was like, I'm just going to stick to one. And, you know, all those other friends that I had in my life were gone. It was these people that I cared about. And I had no respect for my parents. They would pick me up constantly, you know, pissing, puking on myself, random people over me. And, you know, and my answer would be like, I won't do that again. You know, and I just had no respect for them. You know, leave when I wanted to. I'd steal my parents' money. Just constantly be yelling at them and tell them how horrible they are. You know, for the longest time, I blame my dad for my relationship with his mother, who she died when I was 12, and I blame my dad for her death. You know, my dad didn't do anything. You know what I mean? There's just something to, like, you know, not like don't feel sorry for me, but just something just like, I can do this, you know. If you felt like I did, you would do this too, kind of thing. And you know, and during this time, you know, I was having fun. You know, I was getting in a lot of trouble. I didn't care, you know. I was constantly being put into an outpatient rehab by my parents, and it was a joke to me. You know, I can't tell you if they introduced AA at all. You know. I'd go just to try to, like, please them and, you know, just quiet them down a little bit, you know. And so I'd go, you know, go to these rehab classes or whatever it was, and then go out and get drunk right afterwards, you know, just wasting all their time, wasting all their money or whatever. And, you know, during this time I had met this guy who he was a year older than me, and, you know, he, like, completed my life, you know, pretty much at this time. Like, we planned out, like, our whole life together. He was heading off into, he went to West Point, so he was leaving that summer, and so we got to spend, like, 3 months together. But, you know, he becomes later more important, you know, in my story. But, anyways, we stayed together for a long time, like, almost 7 years. And I can tell you, there was, you know, no respect, wasn't faithful, you know. He didn't know half of what I was doing anytime. But when he was in my life, you know, it's like everything kind of switched, you know. But the thing that I look back at is even him. Like, I would have told you, I loved him. I loved him to death, and I would have done anything for him. I loved my parents, you know. I did love them, and I didn't go out there to, like, you know, break their hearts or whatever. But when he would ask me to stop drinking, I couldn't, and I wouldn't, you know. There maybe would be a pause in the beginning of our relationship where I'd be like, okay, I won't, you know, but I would be doing it that night, you know, and later on it was like, no, you know, I wouldn't give it up for anybody. You know, I went to school, right before I went away to college, I was going to play field hockey at this small school in Virginia, and right before I left, I had met these drug dealers or whatever, and I got very heavily involved in cocaine, and I remember being like in the hotel room, all the alcohol you can imagine, all the drugs you can imagine, it was all at my disposal, and this is what I thought college would be like, and this was like, yes! You know, there's nothing to worry about. These people are awesome, you know. And I just thought it would be like that going away to school, you know, like just get rid of the parents. You don't have to worry about them anymore, you know. So I went away and to school. And, you know, the first week, you know, you had to go early to play field hockey. And I only made it like one day. You know, And some people were there for other sports, whatever, and they were drinking, you know, and that was more of a priority to me. You know, drinking always became more and more and more of a priority. And I think, you know, in high school, it was like, let's go to the bars, let's go to the clubs, it's fun, you know, wake up here, wake up there. Like, to me, it was just like a joke, you know, like I was having a lot of fun. And, you know, things started to go really downhill this first year, and then it was, you know, maybe another 6 years of this until I, you know, came in at Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, so I went away to school, and I quickly made a decision. I'm not playing field hockey anymore. I'm going to do this. And, you know, and I pretty much did anything I could to get that next drink, whether it was, you know, bargain myself or whatever you want to call it, demoralization, as they call it. You know, I did it. And I didn't, you know, the remorse would be there for a little bit until I got that next drink. And I can tell you, you know, countless times of leaving that party in the morning, walking back to my dorm room, and, you know, people are, and I wanted this. Like, people were, like, hanging out, and they looked happy, and they looked fresh, and they had showered. And I was still, you know, barely clothed from the night before, if I could even find my clothes from the night before. Walking back to my dorm room, just feeling, I need to get that drink, I need to get that drink, I need to get drunk, you know? And it just kind of repeat itself over and over again, you know? You know, like, during this time, you know, and I at one point I started to be open and honest with, like, the guy I was seeing, the one who went to West Point, and I would tell him, like, you know, like, you know, like some horrible things I'd done that would harm him, you know, like, I shouldn't really care, like, I wanted to clear my conscience first, and he was like, well, don't go back there, you know, don't go back to that party, and I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, and I'd be right back there that next night, you know, and what happens is, to me, what happens is, you know, if I show up in a social situation like that with nothing in my system, I can't be there. You know, I want to rip my eyes out and I want to pull my hair out, and I won't go places like that. You know, and it became where, you know, to get to class, I would need at least, you know, a couple shots in me or whatever. But what happened was I started taking those shots and I couldn't stop. You know, and it would be like, class tomorrow, class the next day. You know. And I thought, well, this school's the problem. I have a really bad reputation here. You know, they just knew me for being that girl. The fraternity room, one guy's room, you know, frantically looking for her clothes the next day in another guy's room, and then going back to her dorm room. And what I did is I called my mom after like three semesters there, and I told her something horrible had happened to me there, which didn't happen, you know, and having no concern how that would put her, make her feel. And so she came, of course, you know, being a loving mother, she dragged me out of that school, and I came home, and thinking that things would be different back home, and it wasn't at all. It was the same thing, you know, just different place, pretty much. And, you know, right when I got back home, my parents took me to a neurologist because they were convinced that something was wrong up here. And And after many doctor visits, we finally found one. I think they took me to like Georgetown Hospital or something. Like, it's in the city. They took me on a day where everyone's working. They're all dressed, you know, like ready to go to work. And my dad's taking me. Like, I'm hungover from the night before. I smell. And they bring me in here like, okay, well, she needs to be connected to a monitor for 48 hours or something like that. And they shaved or cut little pieces of my hair, put all these wires, and they put a diaper on top of it, and they made me walk out in the middle of it, and I just felt like, this is crazy, you know, and, but that's what that's the extent my parents went to try to find out what was wrong with me, and, you know, so I was, you know, put on, you know, more medication at this point, and, you know, and I was at home, and it's the same deal, you know, what can I do to get drunk, and, I wasn't 21 years old yet. My brother was away at school. He couldn't buy me liquor. And I would do whatever I could to find it. And, you know, my parents had hidden liquor cabinet key by this point. And I, after a month searching their house, I found it. It was in between two plates in one of those cabinets, like, hanging on the wall. But, I mean, it was just like, it had to be done, you know. And I know you people can relate to this, is the feeling of leaving your house or going out anywhere without something to calm everything down. It's just not happening, you know. And so I finally found it, and I was really, really excited, you know, it's just like going to the liquor store for me. That's how it felt like. I was almost there, you know. And I know, looking back, when my friends that drank like me in high school, it's like either they could then move on with their lives, go to college, and then, you know, they drank occasionally, and that's about it. And I remember going to the liquor store, and someone got denied, and they were like, oh, okay, let's just go watch a movie. And I can remember so have that feeling on the inside today, like, no way, this sucks, you know, I need something. And I mean, that's how the feeling was for me. And you know, so I found the liquor cabinet key, and it was great. That lasted about maybe a month until, you know, they found me. It was something that happened frequently for me. When I ran out of, if I ran out of liquor and I didn't have enough and I was still consciously thinking, my bright idea would be to go upstairs or be in my bathroom and slam my head against the toilet until I got knocked out unconscious. And, you know, my parents had found me there once, and they found vodka next to me that was theirs. So they, you know, I think they bolted it by this point, so I couldn't get in there. Or they moved all the liquor, that was it. They moved all the liquor from the liquor cabinet, and they put it in this box, and they taped the box up. And I didn't see what kind of box it was at the time, but they hid it. And after another couple of weeks, I found it. It was in the basement in my dad's, like, work shed behind five other boxes. You know, I mean, that was, like, the dedication I had to find liquor, you know. And I even did this when I was 21. I could buy it, but, you know, I'd go there and, like, steal their liquor, you know, and, I don't even know why I did that, but, you know, that was the sense. And even my brother had, he collected beer, like, old beer. He had, it was like a fireplace, like, from there to there, and, not that long, but, and it was just filled with all these, like, old, dusty beers. I drank every single one of them and would put the cap back on, you know, like, as best as I could, you know, and they were, it was disgusting, you know what I mean, but whatever could do it, do the job. And, you know, and so, you know, my parents were finding me more and more. I really didn't have that many friends. If I went out, it was like, you know, to go hang out with my brother and his friends. You know, or my brother, you know, picking me up from random places on whatever, you know, drugs I was doing. You know, I would just, like, show up at his friend's house tripping on acid, like, thinking that was, like, you know, fun for them, you know. And it's just like, no, you know, it's not. We don't want to take care of you, you know. But I never saw it that way, you know. You know, so I, you know, I'm going to school back home, or in Montgomery County. I was going to a community college, and you know, it was the same thing. It just, my drinking be picked up more and more. You know, I was pretty much drinking, you know, all throughout the day and through the night, and you know, just, I mean, that's just pretty much what my life consisted of for, like, you know, maybe 6 to 9 months. You know, no relationship with my parents. And, you know, I was still seeing this guy up at West Point, you know, and, you know, he would come home from time to time, and, you know, it started becoming like, you know, do you need to come out with us tonight? You know, you're kind of an embarrassment, you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't put it in those words. He'd be like, let me go with my friends, I need to see them, you know? And really looking back, like, I was a girl that was, you know, if you don't give me enough attention, I'm gonna do something, you know? And, this one night, in particular, it was the night before New Year's, and we all went out to the bar, and I told him and I promised him that I was going to be the designated driver. I was going to do it. And so I drank at the pre-party, right? That makes sense. And so I got really drunk, and I was like, okay, I promise I won't drink at the bar. And because I really wanted to keep him in my life. I really didn't want to lose him, you know. And I really thought I could do this, you know. But I didn't know at that time I was powerless over alcohol. You know, I didn't know. And I went to the bar, and, you know, what am I doing? I'm drinking. And, you know, he's mad. You know, he's upset with me, obviously. So, you know, I get upset with him, and, so I'm in the bar in front of all these people, sobbing, throwing his friends around, you know, like, you just push him off, and I break my ring open on his face, and, just, you know, proceed to embarrass him in front of all his friends. We're driving home, and, you know, we get to his house, and, like, they're all, like, hanging out, and, like, you know, I'm that girl that's just, like, you know, falling down, running, you know, through people, yelling and screaming, you know, and his parents' house, like, 3 a.m, you know, and that, like, that happened all the time, you know what I mean, whatever crowd I was with, and, you know, I the next day, you know, he was a very forgiving person, and, he forgave me. He was like, will you just call my friends and apologize? I was like, okay. So I called all of them and apologized. And that next night, New Year's Eve, same thing, you know, same exact thing. But this was more of like, I remember I walked into the bathroom and I said, you can't drink tonight. You cannot drink tonight. Just don't. But we were at a party. We were at a dinner party and they were having wine. And I was like, well, wine's not that bad. You know, wine's not bad. It's fine. You know, so, started drinking a glass of wine, and, you know, then I had a bottle of wine, and then I just don't really remember much, but I remember holding a bottle of some kind of, like, rum or vodka at the party after the dinner party, and once again, it was just like, why are you doing this, you know, and I just got angry, and first, I had the idea I was gonna show him, and I was gonna go out to his car. It was cold, and I was gonna just sleep in his car, and be like, idea was like to die and then have him feel bad, which makes sense. But instead, I just, you know, I got extremely, I remember getting extremely angry and extremely just like, this is so unfair, this is so unfair. And I started, he started kicking his windshield, and I kicked it, and it started cracking everywhere, and I started to feel a little bit bad, so I was like, oh my god, he's going to get rid of me. Oh my god, what am I going to do? You know, and I was like, but no, he deserved that, you know. And then I went back in, and I told him that a deer jumped on his car, like out of nowhere. I was like, a deer just started coming along and jumped on your car. And then he was like, why are you laughing? He's like, that's not funny. He's like, you're crazy. And I eventually had to tell him the truth, and the next day, I didn't have the money. I was still... my parents were still paying my way, pretty much. I mean, they pretty much paid my way through everything, you know? And I went to my dad, and I was like, I need money. And that's pretty much how I said it, I need money. He's like, why? And I was like, I broke Bubba's windshield, that was his name. And he was like, what? And he's like, that's what happens when you drink. And I was like, no, that's what happens when people don't act right. And I really believed that, you know? I really, really believed that. And so that's what we're looking at. And he stayed with me. And God, I don't know why, you know. And eventually, we ended up parting. You know, I ended up going to school in Baltimore. I went to Towson. And it was the same thing. You know, I turned 21. And yet I was still stealing liquor from my parents' house. I don't know why. I pretty much lost any kind of roommate that I had. They were like, get out of here. They left so quickly, you know. I was either going through their stuff, breaking their stuff, you know. And they were just like, why? Just don't drink, you know. But that was just never an option for me. To get through life or to get through the day or to get through anything, that's what I needed. And, you know, and I ended up... I was at Towson, and, you know, I was about to graduate, and, you know, I I was drinking pretty heavily at this point. For a while, I still don't know how I passed through college either. I still don't know how. My parents definitely helped me a lot with a lot of my work. My room just became like my little haven area, you know. I'd have 30 packs under the bed, bottles of vodka here, there, you know, and I wouldn't leave for like days, you know, and people, you know, I could have my old bolt on my door, and, you know, people would come looking for me, like, thinking that I had a party in there, but it was really just me just going, you know, completely crazy, and just, you know, damaging relationships left and right, you know, and, you know, and, I eventually had, like, made a couple of friends, and, you know, but so quickly they walked out of my life, you know, and, this one guy I had, I started dating, you know, so quickly, he stopped returning my calls, and I was like, what is wrong with you, you know, and I pretty much, like, I just, like, attached on to one thing, and, you know, so I wanted revenge, and I'm not saying because I'm proud of this, and this is not like, you know, I'm not ashamed of it either because I've been able to work through it with my sponsor, and you know, and I don't act this way today, but you know, I made up this huge story that he had raped me, and I had taken a stapler and a tape dispenser, and I beat my face to make it look like he hurt me. I did barely knew this guy, you know, and I just met him. And so I called the cops on him and everything, and they went to his store, and they were about to prosecute and press charges, and I don't know what kicked inside of me, but I was like, oh my God, I can't do this, you know? And I didn't care. My parents were about to leave on a huge trip. I called them, and I was like, telling them what happened, you know, just running through people's lives, like, just no care. And I called my uncle, because he's an FBI agent, and I wanted him to get me out of the situation, because the cops were like, you're going to go, we can arrest you for felony. And I was like, it's not even like it didn't happen, and I just don't want to press charges, you know, and that's what I was going for. And like, I called my uncle, and, you know, he did whatever he could to get me out of that. He did not ask me if it happened or not. He just said, I will do whatever I can to help you. I was like, good. You know, and that was really my attitude, like, just to get me out of whatever, you know. Short while later, right before I graduated, I'd lost my license, and I knew I couldn't get through the night without drinking. And I was in Ocean City. So I drove to Ocean City, back to Baltimore with my brothers. We both went to school together, and I had to go back to Potomac to get my passport. And my mom was like, why do you need your passport? You know, why do you need an ID? And I was like, oh, I just need to get it. What if I need to go shopping and they're going to card me or something, you know? And so I drove, you know, like, from Baltimore back to home, and the liquor cabinet was open, you know, and I'm 21, I can buy my own liquor, you know, but that's like a calling. I poured a glass thing I remember is drinking a glass of whiskey, and the next thing I was in my car, pulled over on Route 29 in Baltimore area by a married couple. They had somehow got me to pull over, and I woke up the next day, and my parents had come and gotten me, and I woke up the next day, I was like, I should be in class, you know, so strange, why am I at my parents' house? And I you know, I proceeded to yell at my mom or yell at my dad like I always do. And they, you know, they just drove me back up to school. And, you know, they were just pretty much, they had no clue what to do with me anymore. Anytime I was interacting with my dad, I told him to die and go to hell. My mom, I made her cry. I made her cry even though I wasn't even drinking at the time. You know, maybe I was just, you know, sober for that second. She would, if I called her, she would literally cry. She said that no matter what, if I was in the house or out of the house, she was scared to death. Anytime the phone rang past midnight, she thought it was going to be something about me. You know, she was terrified for my life. And none of this clicked. None of this really clicked. So, you know, I came back home from school, and, you know, that guy that I talked about, you know, we started talking again, and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, times, like, where my mom thought that if he was in my life, I'd be okay, you know, if he was just here, and, you know, and I thought that too, but whenever we fought, it was like a tug of war over a bottle of vodka, you know, and And so we were like, I don't know what we were doing, but we were still talking, and, you know, I put him through hell and back, you know. I remember the day he told me he never wanted to see me again. I sent him like a death email, and I told him I wanted him to die. And I tried to kill myself that night, and I ended up in the hospital through many reasons. Actually, I ended up in the hospital through the same guy who I was on the phone with that night, and he had called my parents and was telling them what happened. And same guy that brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, like 4 years later. But you know, I woke up that next morning in the hospital, and this is like towards the end of my before I graduated, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning, and they told me my blood alcohol was still 0.3 something, and they'd given me that charcoal, and because I had taken a lot of sleeping pills, and I, you know, I pretty much had shit my bed in front of, like, you know, it was just, we were between sheets, you know, that's it. And my parents were standing over me, and all I could think about was, I need to get drunk, you know. And I convinced my parents that night that if I stayed away from liquor, I'd be okay, you know, just beer and wine, it's fine. And and that did not last very long. I'm surprised if we ever believed me. But anyways, you know, so I mean, those are just like, you know, bits and pieces of just really who I am, you know. And and really, like what I said, I mean, like, I love my parents. I love them so much, and I never would set out to hurt them like that ever, you know. And but you know, anytime I was drinking, I never knew it was going to happen, and I usually hurt somebody around me. And anytime it was in between not drinking and not a program like this, I was hurting somebody. You know, because what really would come down to that, I hated myself so much. And if I could tear you apart, I would. Or if you could make me feel better, I would take it, you know. And, you know, so I'd come home, I was out of college, and my parents were like, if you're going to live here, you're going to get a job. And I was like, okay. And so pretty much for the next 6 months, my life had become getting up at 7, going to work, coming home, going to bed at 7. My parents wouldn't even look at me. My mom always cooked this, like, great meal, you know, and she would always leave a spot for me, but I would never sit there, and I would just go upstairs and isolate or go to bed or something, you know, pop some sleeping pills and just, you know, get out, you know, and get out into my world. And you know, and during the weekends I would have this one friend left who happened to be that same guy that called the ambulance that night, and same guy that brought me to my first AA meeting. We would go to his parents' house, we'd sit in his loft area, and we would do drugs and drink about and talk about all the stuff we were going to do with our lives, you know, all the great stuff. And we would be there like every weekend. And you know, in December of 2003, I had come home. I was driving home from work, and I remember the feeling. I was talking to myself, and I remember thinking, well, maybe just stop and get a bottle of vodka. Just get a bottle, but don't drink it all. Just drink a little bit and save the rest, you know. And before, like, I could finish the conversation, I was already at the liquor store, and I was already, like, on my way back home, you know. So I knew my parents were going out for a little bit, and I mean, not like it mattered if they were there or not, but I knew they'd be out for a little bit. And what had happened was, I don't remember that next hour. I do remember being in my car about maybe half a mile outside my parents' neighborhood, or in their neighborhood. My brother had followed me out because he knew I was drunk. I had hit a parked car in my parents' neighborhood. I pushed it on a hill, but it was going down, but the house at the hills were coming up, so I pushed it like that. I don't know how. And I got 4 citations that night. I got DUI, DWI, which I didn't know they could get, but they do. Failure to control my vehicle and speeding ticket. And I guess my brother had followed me out, apparently. I was bleeding. My head hurt. And they took me to a holding cell, and my brother had taken me home. And I don't know if my brother was yelling at me, but I remember him saying, and this is what I was kind of coming to, and this was like 8, 9 o'clock at night, and he was like, what is wrong with you? And I just remember the inside, like, feeling like, I don't know. You know, I if you felt the way I did, you would be doing this too. And I didn't say anything. And my mom found me later that night finishing the bottle of vodka in the shower. And the next morning I woke up, and I didn't, my dad, I mean, his eyes were puffy, and, you know, he was heartbroken, and I didn't care. All I asked him was, do I have to go to jail, or am I going to get my car back, you know? And he helped me through the process. I got a lawyer who strongly suggested inpatient. He said I was a danger to society, and I needed to be locked up somewhere. And, you know, my parents, for some reason, they never wanted to do that. I don't know why. They thought they could help me, you know, so I went to an outpatient program, and I saw the steps, I saw the traditions on the wall, and the steps on the wall, and quickly, very quickly, I read through the steps, and I went, told you which ones I wasn't going to do, and that was pretty much all of them, and I'd done the other ones, thank you, and, you know, and we had to go to meetings, we had to go to 3 to 4 meetings a week, and we had to get a sponsor, and we had to get a home group, and I probably went to 1 or 2 meetings, just stumbled in 5 minutes after it started and stumbled out 5 minutes before it ended kind of thing. One day I did meet one girl, and she became the name of a sponsor to me. And that meeting was my pretend home group, you know, because I didn't want to go to jail, and I was still kind of pending because of, you know, the amount I had in my system and all the circumstances around that night. My lawyer was very worried about that, and so, you know, I quickly was like, I don't need to do this. Things started, you know, getting a little bit better around home. My parents, you know, would say hi to me, and there'd be a little more, you know, just a little more light, a little more. But you know, I still drank. You know, I got my car back. I got probation for a year. I got my license back. I mean, everything was like, Christ, I still had a job, you know. Things on the outside were just, they seemed fine. The inside, you know, is like, getting out of my bed was like, I can't do this. You know, anything to get back there to be alone, you know, like, I'd get enough energy to have the courage to leave my room. And then when I got in the car, I'd be terrified, and I want to go right back. And this is without anything, you know, just be like, I need to get back there as quickly as possible. And then when I got back there in that, like, isolated place, my room, I would be terrified again, you know. And you know, right before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I you know, just picked up where I left off. You know, I was drinking here and there. I went to Baltimore in a blackout on a Sunday morning, or brownout. You know, I remember bits and pieces. And that night was, you know, a night I'll never forget. It's not the last time I drank, but it's just a night I'm never going to forget. I went up there just to hang out with this one guy. I hadn't seen him in 5 years, barely knew him. And I ended up bargaining myself, or whatever you want to say, call it prostitution, for drugs and alcohol. And I had slept with 3 married men that night, and it got interrupted by one of the wives, and I didn't know, and like, I was all like, not really there the whole time, you know, because I was so intoxicated and so out of my mind. And I remember that's when I kind of came to, and I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. I don't know these people, you know. And to even get back to my car and my clothes, or like half my clothes, my keys, and my phone, were all somewhere else, someone else's house. And my parents had called everybody. You know, they had called my cell phone, I think, 30 times. And you know, my dad tried to accuse me of drinking and driving. Somehow I made it home, and he tried to accuse me of drinking and driving. And I told him I did enough crystal meth to keep me, you know, sober and long enough. And that just, you know, didn't sit well with them, but it made sense at the time. And but what happened was, the next morning, that stuff like that happened all the time, you know, maybe not like that, but very similar, you know. And something happened on the inside that I felt like I couldn't live that way anymore. I was like, I hate this, you know. I hate the way I feel. I cried every single day, and it just, I felt horrible, you know. And but, you know, after a couple hours, started feeling a little bit better. Started drinking again, you know. And what happened was, the guy that had mentioned before, he brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened that night, and I've been coming ever since then, and it's July 2004, he just said, let's go see a movie and we'll go to a meeting. And I said, all right, I can do that. You know, and then I'm, you know, so happy that I didn't drive, or I wouldn't have gone. And what happened that night is I met met a lot of people that were my age. You know, I was 23 when I got sober, and all these people, they looked really, really happy, you know, and I was like, oh my God. And my thing was, and it's still a struggle for me today, is that I will tell you that I'm doing great. I will tell you that I'm so happy, but I'm like dying on the inside, you know, or I'm not doing something that I should be doing, you know, but I will make sure that you see something else. And it's something I've struggled with since the beginning, because people would ask me, like, oh, what does your scorecard read? And I'd be like, don't know what that means, but 6, you know, and they'd be like, wow, with a week sober, you know, and I was miserable on the inside, you know, and I didn't know what was going on, I didn't know that this was going to be forever, you know, or, you know, at least 5 years that I've been sober now, I didn't know that, I wouldn't have ever wanted that at that time, you know, and what happened was, this girl, she was my age, and she was like, she said she would help me. You know, she said, are you going to get a sponsor? And I said, probably not. And she's like, well, I'll help you if you want. And she just became my sponsor. And she just kind of, you know, put me in her back pocket pretty much. And she showed me how to do service. She showed me what fellowship was like. She started reading the book with me. And, you know, I still drank from time to time. You know, I thought I could I just wanted to, you know, clear things up at home a little bit, you know, get everything calmed down. And but what happened was, you know, I started relating to people. That story I told about, you know, the guy that I almost got arrested, the very first weekend I was here, this girl my age told me the same story, except for her outcome was different, you know. And I was just like, of course I judged her first, you know, like, I can't believe you did that. But, you know, like, little things like that. And, you know, things started getting better at home a little bit. I ended up moving out with, you know, a couple other sober women. And, you know, my sobriety in September, I had gotten broken up in early sobriety, and I took a handful of my sleeping pills because I just couldn't deal with life, you know. And I ended up changing my sobriety date after that. But for a while, it was just kind of I did whatever my sponsor suggested. I don't know why. I'm grateful that I did, you know. I didn't want her to hate me, you know. I had this person that I could relate to. We had very similar stories, and she kind of just, like, showed me the path. And, you know, she left, and I got another sponsor, and I had a male sponsor for a while, and we worked the steps together. And the sponsor I have today, I've had her for 1.5 years now, or no, 2 years. And, you know, I got her as a sponsor because I needed that, you know, female-to-female relationship. But through sobriety, I've been able to work the steps. And it took me a while to really see and believe to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. You know, it was through my experience and, you know, through working with others that I've been able to see, you know, I want to be here. I don't want to test the waters. I've seen a lot of people recently that have got sober when I got sober and are now drinking. And I saw a couple yesterday, and I just, you know, I don't want to test that, you know. And, you know, I know there's something out there that's greater than me. It's not an everyday thing that I can just be like, oh, yeah, you know, give it to God and he'll take care of it. You know, it can still be a struggle. You know, I want the power to be able to control things. But I know when I listen to my sponsor's suggestions and guidance, things go a much better way. I don't know how, but they just do. And, you know, something I want to touch on before I end is the amends. That has changed my life. That one guy that I talked about that I dated for 7 years, now he was on my 8th step in the beginning. My sponsor said, leave him alone, you know, and I didn't. You know, we still talk from time to time, but, you know, eventually we stopped talking, you know, and the sponsor I have today, he's in the military, so he would be like South Korea or, you know, and places like that. And the sponsor I have today is, she was going through something similar with an ex-boyfriend. And because my motives in the beginning were I wanted him back. You know, I wanted him to see how good I was doing. But it changed over sobriety. You know, like, I wanted to make things right because I made things right with my parents. And today we have a beautiful relationship. And I wanted that peace to be there. So I brought it to my sponsor, and she was going through something very similar. And so she's, like, right on it, you know. And the important thing is that my sponsor knew everything that was going on from this amends. Well, everything in my life, especially. But So it took about almost a year, because anytime I went to find him, you know, he'd be busy. He was married now. He had a child. He was in the Army, you know, and so I'd always bring it back to my sponsor. And then at one point she was like, you need to go to Kentucky. Just go and, you know, see if you can meet him. Find a reason to be there. Clancy was speaking in Kentucky, you know, so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to this conference, you know, Clancy's speaking, and so I planned it and everything, and I emailed him. I said, hey, I'm going to be, like, right around the corner, can I just meet up for, like, you know, coffee? And he said, he wrote back, he's like, oh, I'm really sorry, I'm in Afghanistan, I can't, and obviously you can't. And I was like, okay, you know, and I kind of panicked there for a minute, so I, you know, I brought this to my sponsor, and she's like, well, try to get a mailing address. And I was like, okay, and he didn't have one at the time, he'd just gone out there, and this was last summer, and he didn't have one at the time. And so she's like, well, if you feel comfortable, we can work this where you can do it over, you can email it to him as a letter. And so I did. And plans to do a face-to-face when he returned. And, well, you know, in February this year, he was killed in Afghanistan by a roadside bomb. And the moment I found out, like, I cried, you know, hysterically, you know, and but there was a peace there, the same peace that was there when I made amends to him that day, you know, and that I knew no one could take away from me, you know, and it was just, you know, it was amazing, like, that, you know, God, that to me shows that God's working in my life, you know, and that there is something out there, because that was all, I wouldn't have planned it like that, you know what I mean? I would have gone and made amends to him the first day I got sober, you know, and all that. But and because of that amends, I met his wife, who I've never really met before, and she came up to me and she hugged me and she was like, "I'm so sorry." I was like, "Wow," you know, like I didn't even know she knew me, and she told me she was looking for me and she wanted to find me and she wanted to tell me that that Bubba had been killed, and I was just like, for a minute I felt like I couldn't breathe. I was like, who is this, you know, this woman's just like, she's more worried about me than her own husband, you know, who just was killed, and she told me, she was like, I just know how important you are to him, and I know how important you are to vice versa, and I don't know if she knows I'm sober, I don't know if she knows that I made amends to him, but you know, that I have a relationship with her today. I've been able to show up for her and her 1-year-old, or 2-year-old, and she actually found out she was pregnant again a week after he was killed, she found out, so she just had the second baby, and I've been able to be a part of that life, you know, and I would have never wanted that. I mean, when I first found out he was dating other people, I was like, this is wrong, you know, he belongs with me, you know what I mean? But because of this program and because of, you know, like, you know, yeah, because of this program, it's like, it doesn't matter, you know, that's just like, it gives me this peace inside, you know, that I can still, you know, make amends to him, you know, and that was definitely a God working in my life that I couldn't, you know, and like I said, you know, my parents and I have a beautiful relationship today. For a while I thought that I could just show up and I'd be okay, but me showing up and sleeping on their couch is not okay, you know, and so, you know, I just made amends to them actually separately last year, and I paid them back all the money that I'd stolen from them and everything. And it's amazing peace that I would have never wanted 5 years ago, you know. And today I get to, you know, walk other people through this, and I have amazing relationships, you know, like Jamie, and you know, it's not perfect every day. I struggle with a lot of things about, you know, relying on a God, you know, because I want to control, I want to take this, I want to do this my own way, you know, but like I said, when I do it, you know, things are, you know, I'm pretty miserable, you know, and the guidance of my sponsor has never scared me wrong, you know, and I definitely do still make mistakes, but I learn, and, you know, I hope I wasn't too out there, but, you know, I love anything that AA asks me, I feel honored to do, you know, even though at the first time I'd be like, okay, you know, but saying yes and showing up is what I've been taught to do, and I'm grateful for that, because my life has changed. I have a brand new life, and it's because of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that have come before me, and the new people that are coming into my life today that give me, you know, I feel like I have a different light inside of me. So thank you for letting me share.